Mike.
Yeah, what's up?
If you were like a D&D like tradesman, you know, like there's like the guilds and whatnot, or artificers, like goods or whatever, right? In D&D, like you could be like a brewer's supplies or a mason's supplies or a carpenter's kit or smithing tools. Which one would you use? Right? Like what would be your trade? Right.
I think I'm legally obliged to say smithing tools because I've played a blacksmith and also I took metal shop.
Well, I mean, this is Michael. This is Mike. You know, Traveler Mike, not Harbeck, of course.
Perhaps cartographer's tools, because that most aligns with my actual day job.
That's fair. That is true. That is true. That is true. Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I agree with that. Oh, me? Well, I'd simply be the crafter of all nuggies. You know?
Of course.
Yeah.
One would argue you could just, like, craft a McDonald's, and then they would make your nuggies.
True. Smart. Anyways, welcome to Traveler's Tips and Tales. I'm Jake.
I'm Mike.
And today we're going to cover, this is probably, you know, last week we totally might have said, last week of reclassed, guess what? We're dumb. welcome to reclassed episode 7, where we're talking about Artificer.
Oh,
and now
man.
That we're looking at it, there's a pretty high chance of a reclassed episode 8. So be ready for that next week. But yeah, today we're just going to cover the class Artificer in general, very similar to how we've covered all of the other 12 main classes. And so yeah, let's just dive right on into it. So first thing off that we like to cover here is key abilities, and that's pretty much just intelligence for Artificers. You know, they've like that's the big one, really. Everything else can fall into line in whatever order you want. You know, you could have a very high charisma Artificer if you want. You could have a high dexterous or high strength build Artificer. All works out. Just none of it's as important anymore because of certain abilities that let you use intelligence rather than any other skill for any other, you know, trades.
Yeah, pretty much.
Thing. So. Yeah, intelligence is the big one. Like, if, like, honestly, even more so than normal spellcasters, if you don't have intelligence modifier for Artificer specifically, I think you're even more screwed. You know, like, you're even more up the creek without a paddle, you know?
Yeah, if you want, like, the biggest challenge in D&D 5th edition and you hate yourself, play an Artificer with, like, an 8 intelligence.
Yeah, because you not only is very incorporated into your spellcasting, you know, it's your spellcasting modifier in the first place, but also everything else that you do and, like, basically the standard that is an Artificer in the first place relies on intelligence.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Intelligence is, believe it or not, pretty important, but, yeah. So, intelligence, after that, you know, you could do whatever you want. You could be a tank, you could be strong, you could be wise, I don't care, but... just please, please have intelligence. but yeah, so moving on to unique features. The first one is magical tinkering. It's a first level Artificer ability, and you've learned how to invest a spark of magic into mundane objects. To use this ability, you must have thieves' tools or artisan's tools in hand. That's the word, artisan tool, not Artificer's tools from earlier. You then touch a tiny non-magical object as an action and give it one of the following magical properties of your choice. The object sheds bright light in a 5-foot radius and dim light for another additional 5 feet. Very useful, especially if you're not playing a dark vision person. Whenever tapped by a creature, the object emits a recorded message that can be heard up to 10 feet away. You utter the message when you bestow this property on the object, and the recording can be no more than 6 seconds long. So it can only last one turn, basically. The object continuously emits your choice of an odor or a nonverbal sound, winds, waves, chirping, or the like. The chosen phenomenon is perceivable up to 10 feet away. Or the last effect is the static. A static visual effect appears as one of the object's surfaces. This effect can be a picture, up to 25 words of text, lines, and shapes, or a mixture of these elements as you like. And also, the chosen property lasts indefinitely. As an action, you can touch the object and end the property early. You can also bestow magic on You can bestow magic on multiple objects, touching one object each time you use this feature, though a single object can only bear one property at a time. The maximum number of objects you can affect with this feature at one time is equal to your intelligence modifier. Minimum of one object if you have, you know, zero or negative one. Rip. But anyways, if you try to exceed your maximum, the oldest property immediately ends and then the new property applies. Pretty straightforward for the most part, really.
Yeah, I think it's pretty useful as well.
Yeah, it can be very useful, just in like very unique situations, and I feel like it gets looked over a lot, and a lot of people don't really use it.
Yeah, especially after you get to like level 4, 5 and up.
Well, I mean, some of the later artificer abilities are like really cool, so I can understand why they kind of forget about it, but I feel like people look over it in the first place, really. Like, new artificers are not focusing on that ability specifically, but more so just their trades. Which is, you know, reasonable. I can understand that and whatnot, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, you could literally use this just to, like, create the lights in your house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
It's really good for flavor.
You could only have, like, you know, intelligence modifier per of them, but, you know, yeah.
you could, like, embed it into the wall outside of your door, and it would just act as a doorbell. People that come up to your door, like, tap on it, and then it tells them to go away because you're not a people person because you're experimenting.
Okay. Or you just make something else. You make the other one. So you have, like, all five out if you have, like, 20 intelligence, right? You have all five out throughout your house, and the first one that you cast is always your door one, and then when people like knock on your door or whatnot and like bother you and you don't want to talk to them anymore, you just make a new object and you go and you speak into it and you say, go away into it. And then you make it like say that every 6 seconds, just like, and you just sit there and tap it at the door while the light turns off because it's the oldest one. And you're just like, go away, go away, go away. There you go. It's perfect.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Yes, but the next thing, and really you get this at the same level, so spellcasting. Now, you might be wondering, hey, travelers, you know, every time you guys do a class episode, you kind of gloss over everything that's like a common feature among multiple people. Yeah,
Traveler Mike, I thought we do unique features here. Come on.
We do. However,
everybody got spellcasting.
I wanted to talk about spellcasting for artificers specifically because they do it in kind of a unique way. You know, so you've studied the workings of magic and how to cast spells, channeling the magic through objects. To observers, you do not appear to be casting spells in any conventional way. You appear to produce wonders from mundane items and outlandish inventions. And then it goes on to say that you must have a spellcasting focus, specifically thieves' tools or some kind of artisan's tool in hand when you cast the spells. Now, the reason this is crazy to me is because in theory, if you are a new caster and you have not had experience with artificers and you've never like learned about them, you know, later on when you get like counterspell and stuff, you might not have any reason to cast counterspell reasonably without metagaming when an artificer casts a spell against you.
Well, I mean, yeah, kind of.
Because they're producing something through a mundane object.
Yeah, but they're still casting magic through it, you know, just as much as anyone does through an arcane focus. It's just harnessing their power and, you know, focusing it, really. But, yeah, I still get what you're saying.
But yeah, I just wanted to touch on that because it's kind of a unique thing. You know, in Tasha's, they give a couple of examples of how the flavor of the spells can also be very different. And honestly, I think the flavor of spells can be different for anybody. You know, it's up to you as a player and your DM to decide that ahead of time, hopefully. Or maybe it's a last second thought that you had that your DM will approve. Because I think having flavor for your spells is always incredible because it adds uniqueness to your character.
Yeah, you could have a team full of artificers all casting the same spell but in a different way.
Yeah. And by like having this flavor, I mean like Tasha's best example that I'm seeing here, you know, if you're using cure wounds, using alchemist supplies, yeah, you could be producing a salve or producing a miniature mechanical spider that binds wounds if you're using Tinker's tools as your focus.
Yeah, yeah. Checks out. Checks
and that's the other thing. It's like using your focus kind of in a unique way is the way to determine the flavor of the spell.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really neat thing that they point out in there.
Also, though, if you don't care, you can throw it all down the drain because the last paragraph in the tools required section of spellcasting for Artificer does say, as you gain the infuse item feature at second level, which we'll cover in a second here, you could also use any item bearing one of your infusions as a spellcasting focus, which will most likely be like your sword or your shield or your armor or whatever. You could also use that kind of stuff as your arcane focus if you want as well.
Yeah.
If you just want to like throw everything we just talked about down the drain. And yeah.
Also, if you're thinking to yourself, yo, artificers, I thought were like people who just created weird things, not people that casted spells. You're half right and half wrong. They're half casters.
Exactly.
Second level, infuse item, just what Jake was talking about.
Yep.
You've gained the ability to imbue mundane items with certain magical infusions, turning those objects into magic items. When you gain this feature, pick 4 artificer infusions to learn, which we will go over in our next episode.
Yeah.
Learning from the choosing from the artificer infusion section at the end of the class's description, you learn additional infusions of your choice when you reach certain levels in this class, as shown in the infusions known column of the artificer table.
Which, by the way, goes up to 12. You end up knowing 12.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
A good portion of them.
Whenever you gain a level in this class, you can replace one of the artificer infusions you learned with a new one. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can touch a non-magical object and imbue it with one of your artificer infusions, turning it into a magic item. An infusion works on only certain types of objects, as specified in the infusion's description. If the item requires attunement, you can attune yourself to it the instant you infuse the item. If you decide to attune to the item later, you must do so using the normal process for an attunement, which, in case you didn't know, is an hour of time just focusing with the item.
Yeah.
Through like short rest. Your infusion remains in an item indefinitely, but when you die, the infusion vanishes after a number of days equal to your intelligence modifier, minimum 1. The infusion also vanishes if you replace your knowledge of the infusion. You can infuse more than one non-magical object at the end of a long rest. The maximum number of objects appears in the infused items table of the artificer table. You must touch each of the objects, and each of your infusions can be in only one object at a time. Moreover, no object can bear more than one of your infusions at a time. If you try to exceed your maximum number of infusions, the oldest infusion ends and the new infusion applies. If an infusion ends on an item that contains other things like a bag of holding, its contents harmlessly appear in and around its space.
Yep. Yeah.
So you're not going to lose all your stuff. You're just going to have to be bothered by it for a second to fix it.
Yeah, one of the infusions is like crafting items, like magical items, as different rarities and whatnot depending on your level, of course. But yeah, so that's like a thing. But also there's like other like very unique things that only are for artificers for the most part, and some of them like upgrade the further you go in the class, so like you can take them early and then they will progress with you as you level up. It's just like an interesting thing to know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's infusions. Moving on next over to the right tool for the job. It's a third level ability. You get this in addition with choosing your subclass, which we'll cover in a minute here. This one, you've learned how to produce exactly the tool you need. With thieves' tools or artisan's tools in hand, you can magically create one set of artisan's tools in an unoccupied space within 5 feet of you. This creation requires 1 hour of uninterrupted work, which can coincide with a short or long rest. Though the product of magic, the tools are non-magical, and they vanish when you use this feature again. Basically, this is just very helpful for artificers because there's lots of ways for artificers to get proficiency with tools based off of background, and you already get like a bunch just by taking the class, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah, you get these tools, Tinker's tools, and one other of
and
your choice.
One. Yeah, so you already start off with 3 proficiencies, which is like insane compared to most people who have 1. But yeah, and like that even goes further with your background and whatnot based off of what you do with that. But, you know, so most of the time the problem is that you have you know how to use all this stuff. You just don't have all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so this kind of fixes that. So, you know, you're already useful. You already know how to use stuff, but you can't get your hands on the tools themselves, which can be kind of a pesky thing sometimes in games, you know, because, you know, tool sets aren't exactly just like a general store item. You know, you can't buy like a smith's hammer or whatever out there. You kind of have to like piece them together and whatnot from tradesmen, and people don't want to give other people their competition. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
that could be kind of difficult sometimes. But yeah, that's the right tool for a job.
Yeah, so next is tool expertise, which you get at sixth level. And this is a very simple one. Your proficiency bonus is now doubled for any ability check you make that uses your proficiency with a tool. You're really good at tools.
Like really good, like really good.
Yeah.
Very useful. I think it was kind of necessary, honestly. And it goes time and time, like hand in hand with rogues and bards getting expertise as well. So I think it's sweet.
Yeah.
Next up though is a flash of genius at seventh level. You've gained the ability to come up with solutions under pressure. When you or another creature you can see within 30 feet of you makes an ability check or a saving throw, you can use your reaction to add your intelligence modifier to the roll. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your intelligence modifier, minimum of once, of course, if you're a poor soul with zero or negative one intelligence. You regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. I think this is a really good
Yeah, that's
thing.
really solid.
Yeah.
You're basically just being able to help your team with an extra bonus without really having to do a whole lot.
And it's reaction based, so it can be, you know, like after a roll, you can just be like, Flash of Genius, you know, before the DM says you fail or not or whatever. That kind of murky area. I'm guessing at some tables that would slide and some they probably might not, but you know,
Well,
that's
and
okay.
with this one, it actually doesn't require you to do it before or after.
Exactly. That's my point. It's like
Yeah.
it's a reaction based and it's not like a concentration, like guidance, you know, like you kind of guidance, you kind of have to say it beforehand, which kind of limits it to be like things that, you know, only your character would be able to perceive. Like it's hard to guidance somebody for doing like a perception check, you know, because how would my character know that your character's about to start looking around? You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Well, and the other really cool thing with this is like a lot of abilities like this and spells that do similar things will tell you that you have to add it, and say that you're adding it before you know the result of the roll. This does not say that at all.
But
So
yeah.
it's really nice.
It's very
Next.
useful. And you could do it a bunch of times in a day. That was it.
Next is Magic Item Adept at 10th level. You've achieved a profound understanding of how to use and make magic items. You can attune up to four magic items at once. If you craft a
Poggers.
magic item with a rarity of common or uncommon, it takes you a quarter of the normal time, and it costs you half as much of the usual gold. I'm gonna be honest, I did not know it required gold to attune to items.
To make them, it's when you craft that. So
Oh,
it's
got it.
one of
Yeah,
the
yeah, yeah.
infusions to make items, and it costs money. And like the same sense of like a wizard putting spells into their spell book. You know what I mean? It's like there's a bunch of money to like you know use for resources and materials and you know stuff to infuse and enchant a item with magic. You know,
I
it's
just
not
like
cheap.
immediately like I read it and then I forgot what I read.
But yeah, it's like really good. Like this is a really good item.
Yeah.
Because sometimes like making items once they get to higher rarities, this is like only common or uncommon, but like when it gets up there, sheesh, it gets up there in price too and the amount of time it takes.
Yeah, and being able to attune to even more items, which like the original, so you can normally attune to three. Having even just one extra attunement slot, and you'll get more later. We'll go over that. But
Of course, of
just
course.
having this one extra provides you with so much leeway. It gives
Yeah.
you access to items that you'd be like, oh, I don't know. I'd have to give up one of these, and I
I love
really
it
like
too.
these.
I love it too because it comes hand in hand with when I start to feel like, all right, I'm starting to run out of attunement slots. Like
Yeah.
once I hit 10th level, that's where I'm like, all right, I'm starting to like now I'm like counting up and I'm at 2 already and like you know, I see like there's this like other cool item that's in the party that no one's taken that I kind of want, and it's an attunement slot. You know, it's like it's kind of
Yeah.
like hand in hand with the point in time in D&D where it's like, all right, now I'm gonna start having to swap stuff out. You know, which could be really awesome now because you could just use all four. But yeah, next up is spell storing item, a really good ability. It's at 11th level for artificers. You can now store a spell in an object. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can touch one simple or material simple or martial weapon or one item that you can use as a spellcasting focus, and you store a spell in it, choosing a first or second level spell from an artificer spell list that requires one action to cast. You don't need it to have it prepared. That is super good.
That is pretty good. There is more to it.
Let me keep going. Because there's definitely a page here that I totally didn't forget about. page turn. While holding the object, a creature can take an action to produce a spell effect from it using your spellcasting ability modifier. If the spell requires concentration, the creature must concentrate. The spell stays in the object until it's been used a number of times equal to twice your intelligence modifier, minimum of twice, or until you use this feature again to store a spell in an object. It also doesn't like fade after a day or anything. Like, you don't have to redo it every day. You can just like give it to a dude and then they could just like go heckin' far away for all I care. Like, you know,
I think it's important to touch on. The spell stays in the object until it's been used a number of times equal to twice your intelligence modifier.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming you only have an intelligence of 12, which at this level you should really have like at least 16 or 18 preferably,
yeah,
as like a minimum.
Listen, sometimes man, it can be tough sometimes, all right? So
potentially 6 to 10, because you could potentially be at 20. Mm-hmm. So between 6 and 10 times that somebody can just use either a first or second level spell without like having to pay anything.
And the only requirement is that it's on the artificer spell list.
Yeah. Dude, that is so many spell slots that you're saving for, like...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Dude, imagine... So we have a game right now where our cleric just went through an arc where he lost his ability to regain spell slots. Dude, imagine if he had this with Cure Wounds in it.
For real.
Dude, the cleric can still cleric.
I mean, yeah, like, it could... That's the thing, too, is, like, it can be a non-offensive spell too, because it's you could put it in a weapon or in a spellcasting focus, and even then it's not like you're casting it when you attack. You're just using whatever you imbued the spell into as a spellcasting focus. So, you know, you could put like spider climb for all I care into it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
or whatever, you know. You could put levitate, that could be a cool one.
Expeditious retreat.
Expeditious retreats in there, jump, grease, featherfall.
The point is, there's some fantastic things that you could do with this.
You could do detect magic for all I care. You could do disguise self. You can give the rogue that doesn't have any arcane abilities the ability to disguise themselves, which is a self-only spell. You know, that's like one of the things about disguise self is like, it's great because you can disguise yourself, but you can't help out your team if they need to be disguised. You know what I mean? Now you can, because you could just give the rogue a knife that lets him disguise himself 6 times in a day, and then tomorrow you could just make it for him again, like, for free.
Well, and here's the thing. You could use this, if you were using disguise self with this, and you had enough intelligence modifier to do it, you could have the weapon or whatever item you have it on be passed around the entire party, and everybody just take a turn casting disguise self.
That is actually true, because it doesn't require attunement or anything like
that. Yeah, you just have to be holding it. It's just
the wielder of the item. Yeah. They just have to keep concentration, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, that's a great point. Actually, if it was the other way around, like where if them casting it, you had to keep concentration, that would make it not work, because then you would not be able to concentrate all the spells. But this way, everyone can just deal with their own concentration, and it works out like that.
It's fantastic. It's kind
of funny. Yeah.
But super next is magic item savant. This is at 14th level. Your skill with magic items deepens. You can now attune up to 5 magic items at once, and you ignore all class, race, spell, and level requirements on attuning to or using a magic item. What?
That's pretty wild,
honestly. What? You can now use racial items, class items? Bro. Excuse me?
Or level requirements. You can be using items that are meant for like 17th level characters as a 14th level character.
Yeah.
And you could do five of them.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're an artificer that wants Rod of the Pact Keeper. You can't have it. Excuse me, sir. I'm a magic item savant. Yes, I can.
Give me that rod, my guy. There is not an item in this world that the party might, like, the party could be like, this isn't made for you. Let's be real here. You know, you'd be like, excuse me, I made how many bag of holdings for this party?
Yeah, sorry, all items are made for me. All items are made by me.
I am the item guy. Yeah. Moving on from that, though, at 18th level, you get Magic Item Master. And this one's pretty simple. You don't get anything bonus to it, but you do get a really pog ability of being able to use up to, or being able to attune up to six items all at once.
Bro.
It doesn't have anything that goes hand in hand with it like the other two did, but I mean, you get six. Like,
what else do you need?
At this point,
have to hit any requirements. You're good.
Imagine if the ability was also like, so like that was one bullet point, and then the second bullet point, all magical items count as plus one extra to what they already are. So you could have like a plus four weapon. Crazy too.
Speaking of plus ones,
but that's not a thing.
Soul of Artifice, 20th level feature. You have developed a mystical connection to your magic items, which you can draw on for protection. You gain a plus one bonus to all saving throws per magic item you are currently attuned to, up to six. If you're reduced to zero hit points but not killed outright, you can use your reaction to end one of your artificer infusions, causing you to drop to one hit point instead of zero.
Excuse me, Michael?
Yeah.
Did artificers just get the half-orc racial thing, except they could do it six times? Oh, wait, no. Yeah, six times because of six infusions?
No, isn't it 12 infusions?
That's known. You can only have six made at a time at the end.
Gotcha. But yeah.
Six times. I just think it's funny to think, like, the artificer gets hit, and he's been getting beat up, right? And then he gets hit, and then over across the room, like, the fighter or whatever that's holding the bag of holding, just poof, a bunch of stuff just falls onto the ground because one of the invocations that he has, or not invocations, infusions that he has is that he made that bag of holding, and, like, that's the oldest one. So he's just like, oh, well! All the stuff on the ground, just, like, all these, like secret artifacts that the party's been holding on to and whatnot. Like, you know, all the parties always have like that one item that they're like, we don't tell anybody about this item. Okay. Like, we don't got this. Don't worry about it.
And usually it's like, hey, don't tell this other party member that we have this item.
Sometimes it is like that. Yeah. True. It's just like shining there on the ground.
But yeah, that is it for the unique features.
Yeah. Sick. Some pretty good ones in there, honestly.
Oh yeah. And here's the thing. The reason there are so many unique features, you're about to see why. It's because you don't get a whole lot of features from your subclass.
You get four?
Four,
which isn't bad. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's decent. I mean, you might get a couple at third level, so
yeah, some of them are kind of big. So
yeah, so let's get into this. The first one is the Alchemist. Third level, you actually get three things, so that's a pretty neat thing.
Man, subclasses give you nothing. First subclass, first level, three okay, things. Okay,
but you'll go like five levels without getting anything from your subclass. The first one is tool proficiency. You gain proficiency with alchemist supplies. If you already have this proficiency, you gain proficiency with one other type of artisan's tools of your choice.
Hey, do you guys see my point from earlier that proficiencies are kind of easy to get as artificers, but getting the tools themselves can be difficult sometimes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next is alchemist spells, also at third level. You always have certain spells prepared after you reach particular levels in this class, as shown in the Alchemist Spells table. These spells count as Artificer spells for you, but they don't count against the number of Artificer spells you prepare.
I always love these.
At third level, you get Healing Word and Ray of Sickness. At fifth level, you get Flaming Sphere and Melf's Acid Arrow.
Those are both pretty good, actually.
At ninth level, you get Gaseous Form and Mass Healing Word.
Cool.
At 13th level, you get Blight and Death Ward.
You get Blight?
And at 17th level, my favorites, Cloud Kill and Raise Dead.
Oh my gosh. You get the upgraded Revivify.
Dude, honestly, here's the thing, man. All those spells, I have nothing wrong to say about them.
True.
I usually have something bad to say about, like, at least one or two of the spells in these charts, but not on this one.
Okay, Alchemist. Okay. Alchemist,
I see you.
Okay.
I see you. I see you.
I see what's going on here.
Also, at third level, you get Experimental Elixir. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can magically produce an experimental elixir in an empty flask you touch. Roll on the Experimental Elixir table for the elixir's effects, which is triggered when someone drinks the elixir. As an action, a creature can drink the elixir or administer it to an incapacitated creature. You can create additional experimental elixirs by expending a spell slot of first level or higher for each one. When you do so, you use your action to create the elixir in an empty flask you touch, and you choose the elixir's effect from the experimental elixir table.
Ooh.
Creating an experimental elixir requires you to have alchemist supplies on your person, and any elixir you create with this feature lasts until it is drunk or until the end of your next long rest. And when you reach certain levels in this class, you can make more elixirs at the end of a long rest, 2 at 6th level and 3 at 15th level. Roll for each elixir's effect separately. Each elixir requires its own flask. And this is just a D6 table. There's healing, swiftness, resilience, boldness, flight, and transformation. And there's little effects that have description there for each of those. Also, don't be afraid to come up with your own.
True.
If you and work your with your DM, of course, are willing to do it.
Yeah.
All of that at third level.
And by the way, like, we're not reading them, but like, all of these effects are pretty good. And also the like thing about you can use a spell slot to choose which one you want, also pretty awesome, you know.
Yeah.
Once you're actually using spell slots for it, you actually get to make sure that you're making the one that you want.
Yeah.
Very cool ability.
At fifth level, you get Alchemical Savant. You've developed masterful command of magical chemicals, enhancing the healing and damage you create through them. Whenever you cast a spell using your alchemist supplies as a spellcasting focus, you gain a bonus to one roll of the spell. That roll must restore hit points or be a damage roll that deals acid, fire, necrotic, or poison damage, and the bonus equals your intelligence modifier. Minimum one.
Acid, fire, necrotic, and poison. I feel like those are pretty common ones, honestly.
it's almost like spells such as, you know, Ray of Sickness, Flaming Sphere, Melf's Acid Arrow, Blight, the Cloud Kill.
Blight.
It's almost you know, like these spells are designed for this.
You know, I kind of feel a little dumb for not realizing this sooner, I'm not going to lie. I think you make a pretty good point there, Michael.
Yeah. And that's at fifth level.
That is a fifth level ability.
At ninth level, you get Restorative Reagents. You can incorporate Restorative Reagents into some of your works. Whenever a creature drinks an experimental elixir you create, the creature gains temporary hit points equal to 2d6 plus your intelligence modifier, minimum 1.
Awesome.
You can cast Lesser Restoration without expending a spell slot and without preparing the spell, provided you use the alchemist supplies as a spellcasting focus. You can do so a number of times equal to your intelligence modifier, minimum 1, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
That's actually awesome.
Dude, just being able to cast Lesser Restoration for free? Excuse me?
Not even like only once per day, but like a bunch of times per day. All you have to do is have your alchemist supplies on you, which is, kind of probably what you have on you anyways, because, it's probably like, your arcane focus.
Yeah, straight up pair this with your spell storing items, man.
Yeah.
You're golden. And cool. Lastly, at 15th level, you get chemical mastery. You've been exposed to so many chemicals that they pose little risk to you, and you can use them to quickly end certain ailments. You gain resistance to acid damage and poison damage, and you are immune to the poison condition.
Nice.
Solid. Also, you can cast Greater Restoration and heal without expending a spell slot, without preparing the spell, and without material components, provided you use alchemist supplies as the spellcasting focus. Once you cast either spell with this feature, you cannot cast the spell with it again until you finish a long rest.
Dude, Greater Restoration uses 100 gold pieces of diamond dust.
Yeah.
Diamond dust, one of the valuable spellcasting components, diamonds. And you just get to be like, nah, I'm good. This homie is good. Once a day, for free. Yeah. Every day, you could do it once every day. Holy cow.
It would be fantastic just for that on its own, but then you also gain the resistance to acid and poison and immune to poison condition.
I know. Oh my goodness.
Bro, you are set.
That's actually kind of quirky, and honestly,
the alchemist is a great subclass.
I agree. I enjoyed it thoroughly, but I think it's time to move on here, Michael.
Okay. I see you. What are we going to?
I will admit, this is the new one. This is the subclass that wasn't in Eberron. I believe it was Eberron, right? Artifacts that came out in Eberron? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is the new one. This is the Tasha's one specifically. It is the Armorer. Third level, you get the first ability. You get three third level abilities as well. Four. Sorry.
Ooh.
Yes. You get Tools of the Trade. You gain proficiency with heavy armor. You also gain proficiency with smith's tools. Hey, guys, you guys remember when I said that proficiencies are easy to get? If you already have this tool proficiency, you gain proficiency with one other type of artisan's tools of your choice. Again, at third level, your second ability at third level is Armor spells. You always have certain spells prepared after you reach particular levels in this class, as shown in the armor spells table. These spells count as artificial spells for you, but they don't count against the number of spells that you prepare. So, at third level, you get first level spells of Magic Missile and Thunder Wave, both pretty good. Fifth level spells, you get second level spells of Mirror Image and Shatter. Ninth level, you get Hypnotic Pattern and Lightning Bolt. At 13th level, you get Fire Shield and Greater Invisibility. And at 17th level, you get Pass Wall and Wall of Force.
You know, once again, I have no problem with these spells tables.
Not even one of them. All of them. Cool. Most of the time, sometimes it's like one spell will be like really good and the other one I'm like, okay. But I don't care because I get the cool one. But these ones, like, I feel like just all of them are like hitting hard.
It's like, do I even need to choose spells to prepare?
For real. I don't even need to choose spells anymore. I'm just going to run with these ones. I'm just going to totally nerf my character by, like, my entire spell list. So, also, at third level, you get your third ability called Arcane Armor. You metallurgical. Yeah. I think I got that right.
Yeah, first try.
Go me. Your metallurgical pursuits have led you to making armor a conduit of your magic. As an action, you can turn a suit of armor you are wearing into arcane armor, providing you have smith's tools in hand. You gain the following benefits while wearing this armor. If the armor normally has a strength requirement, the arcane armor lacks this requirement for you.
Ooh.
Awesome. You can use this arcane armor as a spellcasting focus for your artificer spells. Also awesome. The armor attaches to you and can't be removed against your will. It also expands to cover your entire body, although you can retract or deploy the helmet as a bonus action. The armor replaces any missing limbs functioning identically to a limb it replaces. And you can doff or don the armor as an action. The armor continues to be arcane armor until you don't But until you don another suit of armor or you die. Dude,
you're Iron
you're
Man.
Just like Iron Man, dude. It's like the coolest thing. You like you take it off in an action. Like basically what that means in my brain is that the armor takes itself off. Like Iron Man. It just like retracts a bunch and then it's just like a breastplate on the ground. Like and no matter what it looks like, you know, no matter what type of armor it is, it could be just a breastplate, it could be half plate, it could be chain mail, whatever. It could be a chain shirt. It covers your entire body, which is cool. Like Iron Man.
Yeah.
And you could retract the helmet, like, and look like Iron Man. Super cool. Like, it's basically Iron Man so far, but, like, I don't care because Iron Man's cool. Yeah. Anyways. At third level, you get your fourth ability called Armor Module. You can customize your arcane armor. Awesome. When you do so, choose one of the following armor modules, armor models, Guardian or Infiltrator. The model you choose gives you special benefits while you wear it. Each model includes a special weapon. When you attack with that weapon, you can add your intelligence modifier instead of strength or dexterity to the attack and damage rolls. You can change the armor's model whenever you finish a short or long rest, provided you have smith's tools in hands. Which is kind of crazy. So, if you pick Guardian, you design your armor to be in the front line of conflict. It has the following features. Both of them come with two or three features. So Guardian has two. The first one is Thunder Gauntlets. Each of the armor's gauntlets counts as a simple melee weapon where you aren't holding anything in it. And it deals 1d8 thunder damage on a hit. A creature hit by the gauntlet has disadvantage on attack rolls against targets other than you until the start of your next turn, as the armor magically emits a distracting pulse when the creature attacks someone else.
All right, really cool. All right.
This is like very like tanky kind of armor.
Yeah.
The second ability you get is Defensive Field. As a bonus action, you can gain temporary hit points equal to your level in this class, replacing any temporary hit points you already have. You lose those temporary hit points if you doff the armor. You can use this bonus action a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended units when you finish your long rest. So you can heal yourself in the moment of battle, the heat of battle, with a bonus action. It uses temporary hit points, which can be kind of rare things a lot of the time. So chances are you probably don't have them, and it's just basically like extra cushion of hit points that is your armor instead of you, which kind of makes sense to me. You know?
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
And like when you lose those temporary hit points, it's not like your armor's gone. It's just, you know, then they're starting to hit you more rather than the armor. But anyways, the other, or so you could choose Guardian, or, you know, you could take a quick nap if you feel like you need a switch, take a, you know, hour short rest and flip it on over to the Infiltrator side, which is very different. You customize your armor for suitable undertakings in the following features. You get five features. Lightning Launcher, a gem-like node appears on one of your armored fists or on the chest, your choice. Like Iron Man. It counts as a simple ranged weapon with a normal range of 90 feet and a long range of 300 feet, and it deals 1d6 lightning damage on a hit. Once on each of your turns, when you hit a creature with it, you can deal an extra 1d6 lightning damage to that target.
It's like a pulse blast.
So you could just hit them once, and then you could just keep getting them.
It's just a 300-foot pulse blaster.
Yeah, it's really cool. Also, when you take Infiltrator, you get powered steps. Your walking speed increases by 5 feet. Awesome. And also, when you take Infiltrator, you get to also have Dampening Field. You have advantage on dexterity stealth checks. If the armor normally imposes disadvantage on the stealth checks, the advantage and disadvantage cancel each other out as normal. What? You're a homie running around and like a breastplate or something, you know, like as just an example of one that's like pretty high armor, but yeah, you know, doesn't give disadvantage, and you have advantage on stealth checks just because you're in a suit of armor. Like, okay, that's so cool. Anyways, that's third level. Moving on. Fifth level, you get extra attack. It's extra attack, but I mean, I'm not complaining. Now you get a whack two times a turn.
You just got like majority of your bread and butter from third level.
Truth.
Do you even need infusions?
Congratulations, you have acquired frontline. But yeah, so moving on to ninth level, you get armor modifications. Learn how to use your artificer invocations to specifically modify your arcane armor. That armor now counts as a separate item, separate items for the purposes of your infused items feature: armor, the chest piece, boots, helmet, and the armor special weapon. Each of those items can bear one of your infusions, and the infusions transfer over if you change your armor's model with the armor module feature. In addition, the maximum number of items you can infuse at once increases by 2, but those extra items must be part of your arcane armor. So you can really just like change out and modify your armor a lot faster if you want, by swapping out your infusions, because there's a bunch of infusions that are like based off of like you infuse a helmet, or you infuse boots, or you infuse a chest piece, or you infuse a weapon, or whatever. Who cares? Now you could do a bunch of them onto your armor rather than just all of your armor only being able to have one,
yeah.
If that makes any sense. Which is really, it doesn't seem like it's that helpful, but it really is in the long run, because some of those infusions are like, whoo, baby. Anyways, perfected armor is your 15th level ability, and you get your arcane armor gains additional benefits based on this model, as shown below. So you just get one more feature for both the guardian and infiltrator armor sets, which I was already pretty happy with in the first place, so sounds good. Guardian, when a huge or smaller creature you can see ends its turn within 30 feet of you, you can use your reaction to magically force the creature to make a strength saving throw against your spell save DC, pulling the creature up to 30 feet towards you to an unoccupied space. If you pull the creature to a space within 5 feet of you, you can make a melee weapon attack against it as part of this reaction. This is a reaction. You can use this reaction a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses of it when you finish a long rest. You can pull a giant that's just like running past you, because it's a reaction. It's on the giant's turn. He just, that dumb, sorry sucker just for some reason got within 30 feet of you because he was passing you to get to someone else, maybe. And you're just like, no, 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 big boy, tractor beam. And you pull him up to you and you hit him with your lightning fists.
You just got... This, okay, I'm convinced this is just the Sith class.
On the giant's turn.
You have force so pull and force lightning.
Also, you get another infiltrator feature for if you want to be an infiltrator. Any creature that takes lightning damage from your lightning launcher glimmers with magical light until the start of your next turn. The glimmering creature sheds dim light in a 5-foot radius, and it has disadvantage on attack rolls against you as the light jolts if it attacks you. In addition, the next attack roll against it has advantage, and if the attack hits, the target takes an extra 1d6 lightning damage. Again. Because, you know, you already hit him twice with your 2 attacks, and then you get to add an extra d6, so that's 3d6, because you get to add 1d6 for one of them, just because. And then, you know, this happens, and they take a fourth one, because someone else hit them, and then they get shocked again. 4d6, one turn. Yep. Welcome to being Iron Man. It's really cool.
So next is honestly like just by looking at the names of the subclass and stuff, this one was like already set to be my favorite. I'm gonna be honest here. I have not read this subclass yet, but I'm still convinced it's going to be my favorite. It's
Alrighty. Called
the Artillerist. You get 3 third level abilities. Mm-hmm. First one. Classic tool proficiency. You gain proficiency with wood carver's tools, and if you already have this proficiency, you gain proficiency with any other type of artisan's tools of your choice. And then next, once again, we get artillerist spells. You know the description for that. I'm not going to read it again.
Yep.
Third level, you get shield and thunder wave.
Awesome.
Fifth level, you get scorching ray and shatter.
All right.
Ninth level, you get Fireball and Windwall.
Keep going.
13th, Ice Storm and Wall of Fire.
All right.
And 17th, Cone of Cold and Wall of Force.
All righty. There's a lot of damaging spells in there.
Yet again, I have nothing bad to say about this spell chart.
You know, you're adding a lot of damaging spells to a class that doesn't have too many damaging spells in the first place. I'm starting to realize,
Also at third level, you want to talk about damage? Let's talk about the Eldritch Cannon. You've learned how to create a magical cannon. Using woodcarver's tools or smith's tools, you can take an action to magically create a small or tiny eldritch cannon in an unoccupied space on a horizontal surface within 5 feet of you. A small eldritch cannon occupies its space, and a tiny one can be held in one hand. It's kind of like a handgun.
Mm-hmm.
Once you create a cannon, you cannot do so again until you finish a long rest or until you expend a spell slot to create one. You can have only one cannon at a time and can't create one while your cannon is present. Unfortunately, you can't dual wield cannons.
You know, that you make in one action.
Yeah. The cannon is a magical object. Regardless of size, the cannon has an AC of 18 and a number of hit points equal to 5 times your artificer level. It is immune to poison damage and psychic damage. If it is forced to make an ability check or a saving throw, treat all its ability scores as 10 or plus 0. If the mending spell is cast on it, it regains 2d6 hit points. It disappears if it is reduced to 0 hit points or after 1 hour. And you can dismiss it early as an action.
You know, mending, the cantrip, that you could cast infinitely.
Yeah. When you create the cannon, you determine its appearance and whether it has legs. You also decide which type it is, choosing from the options on the Eldritch Cannon's table. On each of your turns, you can take a bonus action to cause the cannon to activate if you are within 60 feet of it. As part of the same bonus action, you can direct the cannon to walk or climb up to 15 feet to an unoccupied space, provided you gave it legs.
Because, you know, why not slap some legs on that bad boy?
And this Eldritch Cannon can take three different little, you know... What word am I looking for?
Formations?
Yes, that one.
Sure.
The first one is a flamethrower. The cannon exhales fire in an adjacent 15-foot cone that you designate. Each creature in the area must make a dexterity saving throw against your spell save DC, taking 2d8 fire damage on a failed save, or half as much damage on a successful one. The fire ignites any flammable objects in the area that are not being worn or carried. I like it.
Okay. 2d8 to a bunch of people because it's a 15-foot cone.
The second form of cannon is the Force Ballista. Make a ranged spell attack originating from the cannon at one creature or object within 120 feet. On a hit, the target takes 2d8 force damage, and if the target is a creature, it is pushed up to 5 feet away from the cannon. I like it. And the last one is Protector. The cannon emits a burst of positive energy that grants itself and each creature of your choice within 10 feet of it a number of temporary hit points equal to 1d8 plus your intelligence modifier, minimum of 1.
That's actually pretty good. I love that.
Yeah. Just give your whole team temporary hit points right before the fight starts.
Yeah. It's just like a little, like, I'm just imagining it's like a little orb that floats through space, and every now and then it just pulses with energy.
Yeah. At 5th level, you get Arcane Firearm. Yes. You know how to turn a wand, staff, or rod into an arcane firearm, a conduit for your destructive spells. When you finish a long rest, you can use the woodcarver's tools to carve special sigils into a wand, staff, or rod, and thereby turn it into your arcane firearm. The sigils disappear from the object if you later carve them on a different item. The sigils otherwise last indefinitely. You can use your arcane firearm as a spellcasting focus for your artificer spells. When you cast an artificer spell through the firearm, roll a d8, and you gain a bonus to one of the spell's damage rolls equal to the number rolled.
Ah.
You just get an extra d8 of damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like arcane firearm. All of them
damaging spells that you got as an artificer.
Yep. It's a reason.
Yep.
At 9th level, you get Explosive Cannon. Every Eldritch Cannon you create is now more destructive. The cannon's damage rolls all increase by 1d8, and as an action, you can command the cannon to detonate if you are within 60 feet of it. Doing so destroys the cannon and forces each creature within 20 feet of it to make a dexterity saving throw against your spell save DC, taking 3d8 force damage on a failed save or half as much on a successful one.
You know that orb that's just pulsing with energy? At some point, it's going to pulse with a little bit too much energy. Some people are going to get hurt, and it's going to be cool.
And lastly, at 15th level, you get fortified position. You're a master at forming well-defended emplacements using your Eldritch Cannon. You and your allies have half cover while within 10 feet of a cannon you create with Eldritch Cannon, as a result of a shimmering field of magical protection that the cannon emits. Once again, more energy pulsing.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is just like that one pulse of energy. It's not even a pulse because it stays out. It's just a little force field that's hovering around the... Oh, man. Yeah.
Also, you can now have two cannons at the same time. You can create two with the same action, but not the same spell slot. And you can activate both of them with the same bonus action. You determine whether the cannons are identical to each other or different. You cannot create a third cannon while you have two.
Okay.
I got two ballistas. Which one you want to be hit by?
The answer, both of them.
you just got multi-attack without having multi-attack.
Yeah. Pretty much, kind of. But it says your bonus action, so you're also casting a spell. You know, you're just also, you know, like casting, I don't know, fireball.
Also, depending on how your table rules it, that half cover can be very useful.
Oh, yeah. Can be very useful indeed.
So, yeah.
But, yeah. Moving on to the last subclass here. This one is called Battlesmith. Hey, Michael. I'm going to let you take a wild guess at what tool proficiency this one gets, since all the other ones got a tool proficiency. Which one do you think Battlesmith's going to get?
Cartographer.
Correct. Wait, no. you gain proficiency with Smith's tools. If you already have this proficiency, yada, 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 you're going to choose another one. My point still stands. Proficiencies are easy. Anyways, you get spells. You already know the deal. Third level, you get Heroism and Shield.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth level, you get Branding Smite and Warding Bond. At ninth level, you get Aura of Vitality and Conjure Barrage. At 13th level, you get Aura of Purity and Fire Shield. And at 17th level, you get Brandishing Smite and Mass Cure Wounds.
Some of those spells I'm not familiar with, but they all sound great.
yeah, some of them are better than others. This is kind of one of those situations where, like... every now and then, like, one of them, like, one level of them, I'll be like, oh, that one's really cool. That one's eh, but, I mean, I got the really cool one, so I don't really care.
Yeah.
Anyways. At third level, you also get an ability called Battle Ready. Your combat training and your experiments with magic have paid off in two ways. One, you gain proficiency with martial weapons. And two, when you attack with a magic weapon, you can use your intelligence modifier instead of strength or dexterity modifier for the attack and damage rolls. Hence why, when we said earlier, really only intelligence is like your big thing. Like, it's the big one. You don't have intelligence. I am so sorry. Also at third level, you get Steel Defender. Are you guys ready? Because I'm going to be talking for a hot minute here. Your tinkering has borne you a companion. A steel defender is friendly to you and your companions and obeys your commands. See its game statistics in the steel defender stat block, which I do have here, but I won't really go through. If you guys want to check it out, you can check it out yourself. Which uses your proficiency bonus in several places, so it levels up with you for the most part. Determine the creature's appearance and whether it has two legs or four. Your choice has no effect on its game statistics. In combat, the defender shares your initiative count, but it takes its turn immediately after yours. It can move and use its reaction on its own, but the only action it takes on its turn is the dodge action, unless you make a bonus action on your turn to use its command to take another action. That action can be one of its stat block or some other action. If you are incapacitated, the defender can take any action of its choice, not just dodge. If the mending spell, you know, the cantrip, is cast on the defender, it regains 2d6 hit points, and if it dies within the last hour, you can use your Smith's tool as an action to revive it, provided you are within 5 feet of it and you expend a spell slot at first level or higher. The defender returns to life after 1 minute, with all of its hit points restored. At the end of a long rest, you can create a new Steel Defender if you have Smith's tools with you. If you already have a defender from this feature, the first one immediately perishes. The defender also perishes if you die.
Nice.
Yeah, so it does a whole bunch of stuff. It has, like, you know, it can repair itself, deflect attacks and whatnot, and, you know, has its own, like, stuff, whatever. It has its own, like, attacks and whatnot. And, you know, you can do it on your turn and whatnot. So it's pretty cool. Also, at fifth level, you get the next ability, and it is, again, extra attack. Sounds good.
Yeah.
I love it. We love that for you. Anyways, moving on to ninth level ability, you get Arcane Jolt. You've learned new ways to channel your arcane energy with harm or heal. When either you hit a target with a magical weapon attack or your steel defender hits a target, you can channel magical energy through the strike to create one of the following effects. So, you know, you could do this with your steel defender on your bonus action and still cast the spell with your action. That target takes an extra 2d6 force. That target takes an extra 2d6 force damage, or you can choose one target or object you can see within 30 feet of the target. Healing energy flows into the chosen recipient, restoring 2d6 hit points to it. You can use this energy a number of times equal to your intelligence modifier, minimum of once, but you can do so no more than once on a turn. You regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. So you can be healing without using spell slots even, which is also cool, while you're also dealing damage. Or, you know, you could just, like, crank up the damage.
Yeah. Pretty sick.
And also, at 15th level, you get improved defender. Your Arcane Jolt and Steel Defender have become more powerful. The extra damage of the healing of your Arcane Jolt bolt both increases by 46. Or increases to 46. Sorry, not by 46. It's not 66, it's 46. My bad. It's
still pretty great.
Yes. So you could do, you know, you can crank up the damage to 46 plus the Steel Defender damage or your damage or whatever. Or you could heal 46, which could be a lot, but also, you know, 4. So, also, the Steel Defender gains a bonus, plus 2 bonus to its armor class. And whenever your Steel Defender uses its deflect attack, the attacker takes force damage equal to 1d4 plus your intelligence modifier. And the deflect attack action on the Steel Defender's stat block, by the way, is a reaction. So that's off of its turn. But yeah, Steel Defenders are kind of cool, man. You know, they're kind of quirky. They do their thing. It's pretty neat. It's kind of like the Beast Companion
from the Ranger. Yeah.
But for Artificer. And I'm kind of okay with it, honestly. Like, it's alright. It doesn't do too bad. If it fares its own. I think it does pretty alright.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
Yeah. I think the intelligence modifier to replace strength or dex on attack rolls, really nice touch.
Yeah, definitely.
Please don't let me rely on yet another thing that I need to do. Because this one also doesn't get the thing from, like, the armor where, like, you can negate the strength requirements to certain things.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a reasonable argument for both having high strength and both high dex. So, but yeah, that's Battlesmith. And yeah, that is actually the last of the subclasses. So, like how we did all of the other classes episodes, we'll move on to how just a couple of examples, one from each of us, on how to roleplay such a character of an artificer.
Yeah, so my whole ideology, not having played an artificer before, but understanding the basic concept of it, I think that it's fun to idealize the roleplay aspect as a scientist who just discovered that magic exists and is, like, a thing that you can do. Mm-hmm. And you just start experimenting with technology and science and magic.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to fuse them all together.
You were already a physically and mundane item savant. Like, you were already really good at that stuff. And then you found out about magic, and now you're diving into the magical world. And so you're learning progressively as you level up.
Exactly.
But you already have all your set in stone expertise of, you know, your craft and your trade.
Yeah.
Already to begin with. I like that. I like that. It's pretty cool. I think this is kind of outlandish here, if you ask me, but here's my suggestion. Make a mad genius. And you could make it, they could be, you know, they could be one of those stories of like the bad guy has good morals in his eyes and he's just like insane. You know, he could be slowly, you could like write that into your character of like a big arc throughout the whole campaign of you just like slowly losing it more and more, like little moments that just like tip you over the edge a little bit more and more. And you can keep doing that. And here's what I suggest, just because I think it's funny, is you work with your DM and you become the BBEG, which could be really funny because, you know, you make like all of the magical items for the entire party. like the whole party uses all of your magical items. So, you know, you can just like take away the stuff that they've been relying on for 20 levels. Which I think is just hilarious.
And because, you can have 6 things attuned, so
mm-hmm.
you're already so more you broken just, like, than any of them individually.
Yeah, for real. For real. Yeah. Like me thinking about it, like if my level 20 character, the one that I've had, Cade, if he didn't have his magical items, he would be a lot less powerful, I think. Or at least a lot less versatile, and therefore, you know, less powerful
because
yeah. can't do as much. But yeah, I just think that's a really funny concept of like you become the BBEG, you turn evil or whatever, you just, you know, go crazy, and then nobody has any items anymore. Yeah. Just like the stuff that they've bought along the way. But like every party is gonna be like, oh, the artificer is gonna make me a magical item instead of me having to go and spend thousands of gold coins on a magical item. Hell yeah, I'm gonna sign up for that. That sounds amazing. Little do they know that my artificer is gonna go mad.
Evil.
But yeah. So yeah, that's my suggestion. But moving on, in place of Ben not being here right now, we will cover some low-level magical items that me and Michael have thought up for Artificer.
Yeah.
We'll start off with the one that Ben gave us. Because, I mean, it just makes sense. It's like the most obvious one. But it's a +1 all-purpose tool. It has to be +1 because all of the all-purpose tools are +1, +2, +3. 1, 2, or 3. So this one is the uncommon version, which is just +1. The +2 and 3 are the exact same thing, but just with a +2 and a +3 instead. This simple screwdriver can transform into a variety of tools. As an action, you can touch the item and transform it into any type of artisan's tool of your choice.
Yo.
Whatever form the tool takes, you are proficient with. That wasn't a problem. You're already an artificer. Come on. While holding this tool, you gain a +1 bonus to spell attack rolls and the saving throw DCs of your artificer spells. Oh, this is requires attunement by an artificer, by the way. And as an action, you can focus on the tool to channel your creative forces. Choose a cantrip that you don't know from any class list. For 8 hours, you can cast that cantrip, and it counts as an artificer cantrip for you. Once this property is used, it can't be used again until the next dawn. So, 8 hours of the 24-hour day, you can have an extra cantrip. Also, you get +1 to all your spells, attack rolls, and saving throws. And also, you know, remember what I was talking about, how the proficiencies are easy and getting the tools is hard? Now you have all the tools in one.
And you're proficient with any tool that you make.
Which wasn't that much of a problem, but also might as well, right? But yeah, super good in my opinion. Super good item.
Yeah, the next one I really like because you can kind of combine it with like any explosive devices or anything that you craft or any like
thrown. You can tinker with it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's called the Dust of Sneezing and Choking. Found in a small container, this powder resembles very fine sand. It appears to be dust of disappearance, and an identify spell reveals it to be such. There's enough of it for one use. When you use an action to throw a handful of the dust into the air, you and each creature that needs to breathe within 30 feet of you must succeed on a DC 15 Constitution saving throw or become unable to breathe while sneezing uncontrollably. A creature affected in this way is incapacitated and suffocating. As long as it is conscious, a creature can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on it on a success. The Lesser Restoration spell can also end the effect on a creature. Here's the thing. You can die from this.
Yes. And now, I know what you all are saying right now. Mike, Traveler Jake, you guys are fools. It says every person within, 30 feet or whatever?
Yeah.
Every creature within 30 feet of this chokes on it. You just threw this. You're within 30 feet. Well, have we got the third magical item for you?
Yes. The Necklace of Adaptation. While wearing this necklace, you can breathe normally in any environment. And you have advantage on saving throws against harmful gases and vapors such as cloud kill, stinging cloud effects, inhaled poisons, breath weapons of some dragons. And I would rule dust of sneezing and choking.
Heck yeah, I would rule it just sneaking choice. That's inhaled poisons, my guy. Also, if you're an alchemist, you also are immune to the poison condition and have resistance to poison and acid damage. So
yeah, yeah, and the Necklace of Adaptation, not only can you pair it very well with dust of sneezing and choking, but I think it just fits so well roleplay wise and flavor wise with the Artificer.
And the Necklace of Adaptation, of course, also requires attunement, but who cares? You're an artificer. You have six of those bad boys. So.
Yeah.
In the long run. So.
You ain't hurting.
Who cares? All uncommon magical items, all stupidly funny, in my opinion. But yeah, I think that just about wraps up this episode. Michael, if you could let all of these wonderful listeners know where they could find us elsewhere on the internet. Do you know those such things? Maybe
I perhaps. Do. I found this master list. So you can go to YouTube at Traveler's Tips and Tales, Instagram at Traveler's Tips and Tales, Facebook, sure, Traveler's Tips and Tales, mm-hmm, Twitter at Tips Tales.
Okay.
Tumblr, Traveler's Tips and Tales, email, Traveler's Tips and Tales @gmail.com, Traveler's Tips and Tales.com for fun homebrew things and a little about us for each of us, if in case you want to try and get to know us better.
Michael, I have one question for you though. What if I go on travelerstipsandtales.com and see some homebrew items that I think are pretty neat, but I want to find more things like that?
I'm glad you asked, because we have a Patreon that is set up just for that kind of stuff. Traveler Ben puts in a lot of work creating these magical items and stat blocks and all of these really cool things for us to be able to put out just for you guys. Just as kind of a thank you if you decide to support us that way.
Hey, don't sell yourself short. Sometimes you put out items too.
Thank you to our patrons, Dalton and Ben's mom.
Ben's mom.
Also, yes. Local game stores. Check them out. We got Forgotten Path Games in Vacaville, Mad Alpaca Games in Fairfield.
Of course.
Davis Cards and Games in, you guessed it, Davis. And Hobby Badger Games in West Sacramento. And
very nice places.
These are the ones that we go to because they're close by. If you aren't close by to any of these, go find the ones that you are close by to and go and spend your money there instead of on Amazon or any other website online, because these places need our business.
True.
They do so much for the communities, and we love it.
You also can try to connect to them. I know sometimes we go to them and we'll talk about coming and DMing or other stuff. If you don't have a group yet, this is a great way to find a group. This is how our group found each other. A lot of other stuff. It's just a cool place to check out.
Yeah, it's really neat. So I definitely recommend any local game store near you.
If you've ever thought to yourself, man, I'm such a nerd or a geek or whatever, and I enjoy board games so much, and games RPGs and stuff, tabletop games and all that, but I don't know where to hang out, these are the places. A lot of the times they'll also have room for you to sometimes, because of the recent pandemic, they'll have it very limited, or you have to reserve or whatever, but I mean, that can always be incorporated anyways. We're D&D players. 90% of our D&D life is trying to plan for a session, so we're kind of used to it at this point.
Yeah.
So there's it's cool to just go there and hang out. I know sometimes me and Michael would just like go there, and I know Forgotten Path Games, just because it's the closest one in our town, we would go and we would just, because they had like a, this like shelves of board games that were already opened, and you could pull them off the shelves and play them in the store, and then, you know, you just put them back before you leave, and, you know, we would always go there and play games if we just were bored or whatever. It's, and, you know, you could meet people there, talk to people. They're all just like cool environments in the first place.
And I know that we always talk about the local game stores and stuff, and it's like, oh, these guys are probably getting paid by them to promote them. We're not. We really we just like enjoy them. The local game stores. They allow us to put posters up there to like kind of,
which
put
we're
our
very
name
thankful
there,
for. Yeah,
but like we're not getting paid by them to like talk about them.
Yeah, we just really enjoy local game stores. This is something that we actually like kind of believe and just want to reinforce in the community.
Yeah.
Also, apologies to anyone that really wanted to hear Ben's voice this week. Ben is okay. He is fine. He just technical problems because he can't be home right now is the only thing. And he should be back next week. If you guys are worried about him or anything, he is okay. You know, he's just, we just couldn't put him on this week. It's the only thing. It's we want to put quality in the podcast over, you know, just having all three of us on. Me and Michael can take Artificer on our own. He'll be here to talk about Invocation, or not Invocation. Why do I keep saying
Infusions?
That? Infusions. He'll be here to talk about Infusions next week, and you guys will get to hear his lovely voice yet again and all of his opinions.
But until then,
yes,
adventure awaits.
Adventure awaits.